Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 386.
This week on the podcast, the Iowa caucus was 1 year ago this week in real time and this week last millennium in thought time.
And how can we tell Donald Trump that testifying himself at his impeachment trial would be so good for his ratings?
Plus, looking to compromise with someone, the Democrats choose themselves in the COVID stimulus reconciliation process.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene makes a desperate attempt to cling to respectability by admitting 9/11 was real.
Plus, alert, this Newsom recall thing is actually happening.
And pillows are now political. A treatise on bad puns gone too far.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's it.
So, this time last year, if you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you may remember that Brent and I were on a great adventure. Our last such great adventure, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Because even though it feels like it might have been up to 600 years ago, the Iowa caucuses were basically this week last year.
I had, when we went, we were staying at a friend of mine at his family home, and they were all traveling to the Philippines, which was why
That's right. They
were gone. And that friend this week sent me a picture and was like, oh my God, I can't believe this was a year ago, or only a year ago. And I thought for sure that a mistake had been made.
I mean, it was at least 12 years ago.
Because I knew that that meant that I was at the Iowa caucus, which couldn't have been.
Yeah, we got on an airplane.
Right.
Then got on a second airplane.
Right.
Then we arrived in a whole new city, very different than the last city we'd been in.
Right.
Got
I feel
on
like
a,
it was like,
I mean,
yeah, I feel like it was kind of like a double mind fuck, because like, I know that the pandemic has like been fucking with everyone's perception of time, but also I feel like just politically we have lived so many lives since then. So it was like, we've also had the entire pandemic since then, but we have a new president. We have had an insurrection at the Capitol. We had all of everything else that happened, all of the conventions and everything that happened, like over the summer, which was also in quarantine. Like, it was just like a whole sort of like, I have told multiple people this week that like, well, I was texting you and Grant, and I was like, by the way, the Iowa caucus, it was February 3rd. I was like, was last year on February 3rd. And you were both like, no. No, it wasn't.
No, I mean, just imagine like where we even were in the presidential race at that time.
Well,
first of all, everyone was still in.
Well, Joe Biden was getting fifth place at the Iowa caucus, by the way.
Joe Biden
He's the president
was
now.
Not a relevant part of the campaign process at that time.
Nope. John Kerry was debating whether he was going to have to run for president to save everyone.
And we saw John Kerry as a surrogate at a Biden event that week.
Near dead, John Kerry.
I mean, looked like a wax turtle, as I think is the only appropriate way to describe his facial features at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We also, you might remember, went to events for every major candidate. And so we were really, and then that summer before, we had also gone and visited all of their campaign operations on the ground in Iowa. So we were like really well versed on their Iowa game or the Iowa ground game. And then also what kind of excitement was in the air about them. Didn't translate into anything resembling results of an election at the end of the day. But it was kind of fascinating because we did go to a Joe Biden event that weekend.
It
was sad. It was a sad event.
Very sad.
It started sad because they made us, we had to sneak into it, even though it was in a tiny room, not because so many people showed up. They held it in like the time, like we had been going to like a Bernie Sanders event with 3,000 people right after that was where we were. We had just come from a Liz Warren event with like 1 bajillion people at it. Like we had been going to these huge crowded events. We get to this Joe Biden event. It's like 30 people in a junior high school gymnasium that's only the size of a basketball court.
Average age, 117.
That's right. We sneak in after they try to put us in an overflow room, and we were like, no, we're not staying in an overflow room at a Joe Biden event. That seems like laughable that anyone would agree to do that when there was so obviously like only 3 people at the event. So we sneak in and we end up in the crowd behind him. And then they decide they're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance, one of the many things I've been holding against Joe Biden this whole time.
Right.
We turn around and our noses are literally on the flag that they're pledging to.
we were standing at the flag.
We were standing like in the flag. And so then we had to do the Pledge of Allegiance to a flag that was literally in our faces, like like touching our faces. And as you know, I don't pledge. So that was awkward for me. At least no one could see that I wasn't pledging because I was inside of the flag that they were pledging to. That was confusing. Then
one of the olds passed out.
Somebody almost died in there. And then we finally had to leave. That was after the era of the No Malarkey tour. So we didn't get to see the No Malarkey tour bus. And it was malarkey aplenty there just 100% of the time. So it was one of the more confusing turns when he became the front-running candidate based on our experience with his campaign operation in Iowa, which was like silly town nonsense.
Yeah. What a world.
What a world. But if all of that is saved for posterity in our stories, like our highlighted stories on Instagram, if you are interested in reliving that experience with us, I highly recommend you go through and experience the early Buttigieg days, experience the days when Liz Warren had voters, experience the days of our, of peak Sandersness. It was a good time.
Watching the Super Bowl with Amy Klobuchar?
That's right. We did watch the Super Bowl. Oh, yeah. We watched the Super Bowl, which is today, with Amy Klobuchar last year. And she promised that she was going to come and speak at halftime and instead spoke during the game, which is peak Amy Klobuchar.
Super rude. Yes.
But there was
also
free food.
Also handed out the most hilarious t-shirts.
Oh, my God. Those t-shirts that had like, it was like a poem in 100 parts on the back of a t-shirt.
On the front, it says Amy Klobuchar beats Donald Trump. And then on the back, it gives like 700 reasons as to why she would beat him, like in the tiniest font, like in a list on the back of the shirt. It's the most bonkers shirt you've ever seen. We have them, obviously.
Obviously. The worst messaging anyone has ever attempted for any kind of campaign. But
also green, which I understand was a color that she was going with at the time, but nobody's trying to wear a green t-shirt.
Ever. No, the whole thing was really sort of ill-planned, but interesting because I will say that again and again we did find, because we were in Iowa sort of twice within a, an 8-month period or whatever, because we went to the fair the year before that. Amy Klobuchar's staff was jazzed about Amy Klobuchar every step of the way. Like the people that liked her loved her. Because swag. We got a lot of Amy Klobuchar.
She does have a very specific type of energy.
Yes.
So like, I get it. Whereas Pete Buttigieg has a specific type of lack of like any quality that anyone might like. So that was confusing to us as to why anyone, literally anyone, might like him. At least Amy Klobuchar, who I don't personally like, has a thing that she is bringing that like people can be like, oh, that like extreme mom energy is really a thing that I'm looking for in my life.
Extreme Karen energy. Remember the people the people caucusing for her at the caucus site we went to? I mean, you did not fuck with the Amy Klobuchar caucus crew. It was like a group of the scariest middle-aged women you have ever seen in your life. Like, and they were going to Karen that entire situation until they were declared the winners of a situation in which they were not the winners. So it was fascinating to watch.
Oh boy. The Iowa caucus.
The Iowa caucus. World. And then this year, what we have for Super Bowl week instead of the Iowa caucus is an impeachment trial starting Monday. So it's always an important week in America when early February rolls around.
I guess so. Yeah.
The impeachment trial has been a bit of a boondoggle for the Trump world folks because they can't find lawyers. They finally found some lawyers, but now the Democrats invited him to testify. And listen, everybody would like him to testify.
Hello.
He
would like to testify, too. He's doing the wrong thing and listening to his lawyers. Because obviously his lawyers were like, under zero circumstance are you going to be testifying at this impeachment trial. You know he is just waiting to get up there and testify. And I feel like his lawyers should just not stand in his way.
No, here's the thing. It's a losing case that they're going to win anyway. So they are in a situation where they literally can't fuck it up because there is no reasonable reason that they are going to have to make any kind of argument about anything. They can show up, like, stick their tongues out, and then return, and then nothing will have happened. The Senate is not courageous. They're not going to do anything fun because they're horrible. So, at least put on a good show. Donald Trump is only useful to us insofar as he can put on a good show. He's not, like, an effective person. He doesn't accomplish things. He's a person who gets good ratings. Let him get some ratings for being a complete insano nonsense person and then having to answer questions from non-insano nonsense people on the stand, and let that be what takes him down. Everyone needs him taken down. Just like give him the opportunity to take himself down so that you don't have to be responsible for doing it.
Right. Exactly.
It's easy peasy. In any case, We're both highly in the camp of wishing that he would testify. The Democrats seem to also be in that camp. The Republicans seem to know what they know about what that does to them, and are probably blackmailed lawyers to represent him in the first place, specifically so that they could prevent him from doing this, from representing himself. But I'm just here to say that I think it's in his interest to do it. It's not in the Republicans' interest, but he doesn't care about them.
Never has.
Never has. So I say live your truth. In the words of a California prophet.
I was about to say, I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
I was just, there was a TikTok account that I that became very controversial on a text chain that I was on that that just gives like ridiculous rundowns of astrological signs and their likelihood to do insane things.
Oh, I love
like
this channel.
Fight
right,
off
like survive polar hand-to-hand
bears
combat
with
a polar bear.
Bear.
Yeah, uh-huh,
I was rated the most the most likely to survive.
Oh,
that
I was
conflict.
Number three.
Yeah, so we're high polar bear astrological signs, and so I've been feeling more more interested in California bullshit since I found out that it might explain that I, you know, me as a person who would survive hand-to-hand combat with a polar bear. Which I felt certain that anyone who knew me personally would rate me last for. So, I mean, that's like, think of all the reasons that I would not be qualified for hand-to-hand combat with a polar bear. Like, first of all, I'm afraid of, like, all things in nature. I'm probably allergic to polar bears, if right. other animals are any guide. I'm tiny. I don't like to be outside. I don't mind the snow, but, like, I'm not trying to be near a bear. But I will note that when I was a kid, I used to call polar bears Lila Nordstrom's. I don't know why. I just had a stuffed polar bear that I named Lila Nordstrom.
Oh, that's right. I heard this
and then
story
I called
before.
All the polar bears Lila Nordstrom's. So there was something kind of poetic about finding out that
well,
I would be rated.
Say, the list doesn't say how you would survive the hand-to-hand combat. So maybe what you would do would like join up with
yeah,
the
polar befriend
bears
the polar bears.
As a form of survival.
Yeah. I mean, I could right? see myself befriending a polar bear.
It doesn't
bear.
Mean that you're going to kill them with your bare hands. It just means that you would survive.
Yeah. Lila Nordstrom support other Lila Nordstroms every step of the way.
That's right.
In any case, oh, by the way, before we move on to real news, I did want to note that the thing that we have been saying this whole time, which is that Chuck Schumer is moving to the left to avoid a primary challenger in a really like open attempt to not have to deal with like an AOC style contender in 2022 is now a headline on the New York Times today. So it's been verified by like the most moderate of Democratic political sources. So that's not even a controversial, that's not a theory anymore. We just like now know that's what's happening. So let's make him deliver for that, you guys. And then let's primary him anyway. Why not? I love primaries, but you know, make him deliver.
Totally.
In any case.
Yeah.
Let's talk about COVID stimulus.
Let's do it. We are moving forward with budget reconciliation on most of this $1.9 trillion package. We did not pull all of the details of the Votorama because it literally went all night and they voted on 7,000 amendments, some of them good, some of them bad, some of them crazy, some of them newsworthy, some of them not. They ultimately passed it at like 5:30 a.m. with Kamala Harris, who swooped in to cast the tie-breaking vote.
After helping Maisie Hirono fix her scarf.
Right. I think the big takeaway, at least in terms of those amendments that they wanted to get passed that were as a part of the overall plan that Biden had introduced was we're not going to get a $15 minimum wage increase as part of this anyway. And then, I mean, I think that's really it. The $1,400 checks made it through, but they're now discussing how they are going to further means test them. So I think we're really going to talk about this more broadly in terms of what they're doing, how they finally decided to do it, and how they're ultimately fucking it up, as opposed to telling you specifically every single thing that they voted on.
We knew they would. So you probably just are curious how. It's you don't need to know what they're not fucking up because we shouldn't have to worry about things they're not fucking up.
Yeah. I will say, you'll see, I took a bunch of notes on here. And if you were to look at them as a viewer, you would see the emotional roller coaster that I went on over the last like 72 hours since this Votorama started.
it was an adventure to read this morning.
Yes. And I will say, I still do want to give them a little bit of credit despite what they are essentially going to fuck up and probably do wrong. But this is what we have been crowing for them to do for like literally since Inauguration Day. And like, sure, we're a couple weeks past Inauguration Day, but like also, you know, they didn't, there had been rumblings of them sort of like just going through regular order all the way until March, to when they when the unemployment insurance ran out, and they aren't, it will probably be March before they actually get some of these things like actually sorted out and then like out into the world. But like, you know, as early as this week, they were having 2-hour meetings with 10 Republicans, you know, we told you about last week. Like, Susan Collins was having a press conference talking about how great and wonderful their meeting was and how much of a joy it was going to be working with Joe Biden, even though they didn't agree with each other on things. And it was days later that they were like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
So, like, I have to at least, you know, be like, okay, well, you did that right.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, at least in terms of how you're going about this, like, you took a note, not necessarily from us.
Feel like podcast, maybe but. Chuck Schumer is playing Joe Biden a little bit, because I feel like he was like, sure, go ahead, meet with these idiots, Joe Biden, do you? And then was kind of like, secretly, I'm talking to Bernie Sanders. He's the head of the budget committee, and we are going to pass this with reconciliation, whether or not you look like you worked with Republicans. And then you're going to be in a position where you have to approve or not approve. But right. Go ahead. If you want to hang out with Mitt Romney, we're not here to stop you. Like, I feel like Chuck Schumer orchestrated something so that Joe Biden would feel good about being involved in this process, because he's so resistant to doing anything unilaterally, even though he has totally. Literally no choice.
Yep.
And Chuck Schumer has been in this environment in a way that, you know, Joe Biden hasn't, and is not idealizing what's going on with the Republicans, because he knows how impossible they are. And so he was probably like, go ahead, have a meeting if you need to have a meeting, if it'll make you feel happy to have a meeting. We're going to be over here chatting with the budget committee, and you go feel free to take all the meetings you want.
I think you're right. I think the one thing that we sort of mentioned already, but that is the more I think about it, and this was part of the emotional roller coaster, because this was the last note that I took, but I feel like it probably goes best now, is the $1,400 payments, because there's a million different things about, you know, we talked last week about the messaging, about the $600 down payment, which is how they're going to get to $2,000 with this $1,400 check. And, you know, you and I before the podcast were like talking about the insanity of like using 2019 tax returns, because like we've gone through the entire, like we already have new W-2s from 2020, which is when everyone lost their jobs and didn't make any fucking money. So like just the way that they are doling this out is insane. But like they are now talking about bringing down the cutoff for where they're going to start phasing it out from $75,000 to $50,000. So like you are talking about, and I looked at the median income at Georgia, just specifically, because I feel like that is really sort of like how we got to the point where we're at 50-50 in the Senate, and also what those two candidates were like absolutely 100% running on there. The median income there is $59,000. So we are talking about literally the average Georgian getting phased out of that $1,400. And these are people who got the $1,200. They're people who got the $600. And you went there and specifically promised them that you were going to give them $1,400, and now they're not going to get $1,400. And that's obviously, that's just a, you know, that's just Georgia.
Actually, this is the average income, not the median income. I just want to...
Oh, sorry. No. Got it.
The median income is always lower than the average income, but... That, nonetheless, the point stands.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
Like, the average Georgian is not going to be receiving this check. And these are going to be people that received them from Republicans.
From Donald Trump. Right.
Yeah.
It's such a political loser. And there's zero reason to do it. I mean, literally zero reason. I mean, they passed all of these things at 51 to 50. Anyway, I don't know why you would negotiate yourself out of sending everybody $1,400. It's so stupid, just for every reason. But certainly politically, I think that these guys often get so caught up in like making the right decision for whatever the political reason is, and it's just sort of like, well, if your main concern is the political reason here, this is a big ol' loser.
Also, means testing any kind of assistance like this in an environment where we're in like a crisis is slower and more expensive than not doing it anyway. Like,
I know
the idea that they want to increase the burden on taxpayers, especially based on old tax return numbers, but just like in general, we have a way of making sure that the ultra wealthy do not get to keep that money because we have a way of taxing it back. So give everyone the money so that they have it now. We talked about this with the $1,200. You give it to everyone so that people spend it in the economy now, and the people that didn't need it can afford to have it taxed back. The idea that people who make $51,000 a year don't need the $1,400, though, especially when they made that money in 2019, who knows if they've made any money in 2020, is just the most insane thing I've ever heard in my entire life. The idea that we are considering ourselves responsible for being fiscally responsible with direct help to people when we have signed off on multiple irresponsible tax cuts and things like that in the last 4 years that go to the ultra wealthy only. The fact that we are means testing this at a time where the ultra wealthy have made enough during the pandemic to, I mean, like Jeff Bezos could pay every single one of his workers $100,000 and not lose any money, you know, based on what he had before and after the pandemic. Like, the fact that we're in a situation like that and we're talking about only giving a tiny amount of help to the most desperate people on earth who literally, I mean, in the country, who like literally, you know, that would be a life-changing amount of money for them, but it would be life-changing for people who make $52,000 a year also, and they might actually spend it in the economy where other people could benefit from it as opposed to having to pay debts down with it, which is what everyone else is going to have to do. It's not going to enrich the economy at all, and that's the only reason to give a stimulus. Like, the idea that it's Democrats that are doing this to themselves is the most insane thing I have ever heard in my entire life.
I agree, and it seems like they have, you know, it's so hard because they're always like a, you know, one step forward, one step back. I almost said two steps forward, one step back.
I feel like they're more like one step forward, two steps back. Accurate. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, there was I saw an interesting thing happening as I was pulling notes for the podcast this week. There were articles on both Politico and Huffington Post about Democrats, like, caring about the deficit is no longer in vogue for Democrats. Basically.
Okay.
Now that's not to say that those people are not out there. You know, Larry Summers specifically was out there, like, you know, took a lot of flack from Democrats because he said that if we sent everybody $2,000, then that was going to overheat the economy. But interestingly, you know, the head of the Biden Economic or Council of Economic Advisors was out on CNN later that day calling him profoundly wrong. And then administration officials, like, basically spent the entire rest of the day trashing Larry Summers. And Larry Summers basically wrote the Obama stimulus bill in 2009. It was like his main, you know, economic advisor. So, you know, this thinking about deficits and balanced budgets and things that we sort of like started caring about as Democrats anyway, like under Bill Clinton, you know, is not really what's in favor, which is great.
Right.
But they still can't get out of their own way because, you know, Biden himself all week has been talking about how the stimulus can't be too big. It can only be too small, you know, and like, you know, Tom Perez and a bunch of like Democratic officials sent a letter to the Biden administration saying that it was actually the 2009 stimulus ended up prolonging the economic pain and inhibited our ability to bounce back quickly. And like that was notable because like nobody ever is willing to say anything bad about the Obama administration. Right. So the fact that his labor secretary acknowledged that that 2000 stimulus was too small, you know, like, I mean, we really are, I think, moving forward as a party in our thought on this, but we can't yet put it into action, right?
Yeah.
We're saying that we can't go too big, but like, if we couldn't go too big, then we would be offering everyone who had lost their job, you know, to be added to Medicare. We would be sending $2,000 checks literally every month and doing it retroactively. So like, they're saying one thing, which does give me a little bit of hope moving forward. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to pass, you know, Medicare for All tomorrow just because they've stopped caring about the deficit. But like, if they can acknowledge that the 2009 stimulus was too small and we don't have to care about the deficit and we can only go too small on this stimulus and we can't go too big, by the way, a lot of jokes this week about small packages and big packages. Like, I just don't understand why they can't. The thoughts are already in their head. Right? They're already thinking the thoughts.
They can't think them in specific terms. Like, that's what's so infuriating to me about this $1,400 conversation is it's in parallel to being like, we can't go too big. They are telling us well, we said $2,000, but what we really meant was we were going to give you only as much as we owed you after the amount that we couldn't deliver on for you because of the Senate, even though Donald Trump was who was most publicly advocating for it just a few weeks ago. So,
totally.
Listen, we're going to do our very best to get you the tiny amount that we feel that maybe we owe you, but not as many people as we promised would get it in the first place. And we're right. having this whole conversation while they're sitting there being like, Larry Summers was wrong. If Larry Summers is wrong, and they are right that the 2009 stimulus prolonged the economic pain, it also didn't come to any of us. They spent a huge amount of money
went to banks.
Propping up banks that none of us were benefiting from. So if yeah. they understand that the problem was, A, that stimulus was too small for regular people, and B, that it was incorrectly oriented, then what yep. could be the more logical series of, like, the more logical outcome of that than sending like a large check to everyone?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. it's just, well, and this is another thing that I think it was like Ezra Klein or somebody who I was reading was saying this, which was like, the under the Obama stimulus or under the Obama economic policy, they had this tendency to favor minute changes in people's income because technically people are more likely to spend money they don't realize that they have. So like if you start having a little bit more money in your bank account due to some weird thing with interest rates sure. and a tax rebate and a whatever, you're yeah, more yeah, likely yeah. to spend it than if you know about it because you're more likely to save money that you feel like is a windfall. But because of that, they had all of this economic policy that while it was targeted potentially, and not enough of it, but targeted towards regular people, people didn't give them any credit for getting it because they didn't know they had had it. And
right.
part of your job as a politician, if you want to keep being in a position to make policy, is to let people know who gave you the money in the first place and that you had it, instead of making you right. feel like, well, maybe I just worked harder this month or something, and I feel tired anyway, and I must have saved more this month. I don't know what happened. Like, instead of making you feel like some fluke happened that had nothing to do with policy, where you just ended up yeah. with a small amount more than you had, instead of doing that, you give people the checks so that you can be like, we give you checks. That's how we help you. And they're like yeah. falling back into this mentality of like, well, we don't want to help everyone too much directly. Instead, we'll come up with a really indirect way to help them. That way, it may not actually help them, and they definitely won't notice if it does help them, but we will feel like we have done our due diligence in not making the deficit explode. That
yep.
isn't how you do it in a crisis, you guys, especially when you have a fascist party literally waiting in the wings, because Donald Trump yep. would have no shame about going in and being like, I'm going to give you $2,000. And you know what? He would probably make it happen. Like, that's, I think, totally. You know, Donald Trump is who made the $2,000 conversation happen. It was Bernie Sanders that gave us the idea. It started with Democrats, but because mainstream Democrats didn't want to take it up, it was actually Donald Trump that made that conversation seem credible. It was Josh Hawley, who is literally a traitor to this country, who promoted that in the Senate. Don't yeah. let them be the party of $2,000 direct assistance while we're the party of like, let's nickel and dime you. And if you make $52,000 a year, we're not going to give you the full amount. You get it. You have too much money. Like, fuck off. Right. By the way, anyone who's trying to convince you that they make tons of money at $50,000 is deluding themselves. That's not a ton of money anywhere. It is
no.
nicer than making less money. I'm not here to knock totally. People that make $50,000.
Above the poverty
but
line.
Literally every single person that makes $50,000 should be making more. There is no one in this country who makes $50,000 that does not deserve more money than that, whether right. or not you, a person who is like a billionaire, think that their labor is valuable. I know that their labor right. is worth more than $50,000. So, yeah. like, don't be so out of touch as a politician that you don't know that.
I know. It's crazy. It really is crazy.
It's infuriating. And yeah. listen, they're instead occupying their time making show votes about who can and can't keep committees in the House, but they can't seem to expel any of these people. Like, Marjorie Taylor Greene is a person who literally has, like, threatened other members of Congress. Like, she is a person yes. who is not fit to serve in the House anymore. And they stripped her of her committees this week, but they did not kick her out.
Great. No. And the only reason that the House had to strip her from her committee is because the Republicans were specifically did not do it.
Yeah.
They met to do it and then just decided not to.
Well, you know, it's so hard when you have a clear crazy person who doesn't even really share your values, who's just out there making you more famous and raising tons of money. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. What are you supposed to do? Turn the money away? from conspiracy theorists? No, you have to let her go on denying 9/11 until someone forces her to admit that she, like you, knows it's real. But she gave a floor speech on the House that was like the most insane thing anyone's ever heard. I want to remind everyone before we get into this that this woman's background is just as the owner of a CrossFit. Right. She's like a fringe conspiracy theory activist whose professional background is a CrossFit owner. So she is a small business owner.
Right.
Who doesn't?
We're not here to denigrate small business owners being in the House of Representatives.
Who has not taken,
God bless them,
not taken any lessons from that experience, apparently.
No.
And is also, I think, fairly wealthy herself.
Probably.
And instead, like, you guys, I mean, first, she talks about Jesus a lot. Listen, not also surprised.
And she's wearing a free speech mask during the entirety of it.
Yeah. She told
which
an insane story about how she attended a, quote, gun-free school and that she was taken.
This story was so crazy.
Taken hostage in the 11th grade by someone who brought guns to school. And the point of her story was that there were no good guys with guns in there to save them. In a school, as an 11th grader.
That's right.
I also have questions about this, because how old is she? Because, listen, there were acts of mass violence in schools before. However, the mass shooting in schools thing was not, like, a common thing until around 1999. Like, Columbine was the first, like, really big school mass shooting event that we all remember.
She is 46.
So she's saying that before Columbine, she was in a poorly publicized mass like gunman mass shooting incident in her high school, and the message that she took away from it is that there were no other students with guns to stop him.
That's right.
It is. I, you know, in writing my book, as Brent knows because he read it, in I talk about Columbine in the foreword, because I talk about how up until Columbine, I really had no conception of what a act of mass violence in a school environment would be like. And now I sort of see that there's a relationship between the kind of trauma that I endured after 9/11 and the trauma that school shooting victims like Columbine kids who are my age also endured at that time. But the idea that somebody who went through a traumatic event like that, if that is, I mean, who knows what the story is. Which,
she said it happened down the hall from her.
Oh, so she was just in a classroom hearing about how no good guys.
I think she was just at a school where, like, somebody brought
a gun
and, like, attempted to hold class up or something. And then, like, that was that. I mean, like, there's probably no way to even check whether it's a real story because, like, ultimately it was probably, like, while potentially scary for some of the people in that class, if it is actually a thing that happened, like, it was probably inconsequential enough that, like, could not be fact checked.
This is a story that was a storyline on My So-Called Life, as I recall, where also nobody got shot. And it was, listen, it's traumatic to have a gun brought to your school, but not because there aren't enough other guns. And maybe she would know that if this gun incident had been serious enough that there had to be some sort of intervention, because I just, like, that for some reason, like, the idea, because I've been thinking so much about the connections between my experience, which has never left me, and the experience of having, you know, of kids who went through other, you know, who've gone through acts of mass violence at their schools, and how that obviously also never leaves them. The idea of someone in telling this story, someone who had chased David Hogg 2 years ago, you know, through the streets of D.C., antagonizing him, who is now claiming that she has experienced a similar incident and took, like, the most insane thing away from it that anyone has ever taken away from an incident
offensive.
In their life is so offensive and so frustrating. And the fact that she's also a 9/11 denier, I think, is just, like, a hilarious, you know, extra on this.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. She finally had to admit it was real, which I think let me remind our listeners that that means she knew before. She knew as she knows. She knows 9/11's real.
Yeah.
She was just lying to you. In any case,
yeah.
She went on a tirade about murdering babies. That was a whole thing, because nothing gets her riled up, apparently, like abortions and school shootings, not having enough good guys with guns. Her own mouth is a wild and crazy place.
I mean, God.
And ultimately,
anyway, thank God.
Thank God. 11 she Republicans joined with the Democrats to strip her of the committees.
Yep. Not enough.
Not enough.
I mean, it was enough to have it pass.
Yeah, 199 House Republicans voted to keep this woman who has been literally endangering other members of the House on her committees, one of which is the Education and Labor Committee.
And that was the one that was obviously, like, the biggest issue. I mean, like, sure, you want to have a crazy person on the Budget Committee. I mean, like, whatever. Obviously, I think that she should just be expelled from the House generally, as do you. But, like, you know, I mean, you can't... the fact that not more than 11 Republicans didn't think that she couldn't be on the Education Committee is disgusting.
A woman who thinks there aren't enough, there are too many gun-free schools.
Right, exactly. And that Parkland and Sandy Hook were false flags.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She loves to talk about the false flags.
Yeah.
It's wild. Pelosi's been throwing some great shade. You can count on her for that.
Yes.
There's times that we disagree with Pelosi. Sure. There's times we're frustrated with her. You will never catch me being frustrated by her shade, though.
Totally. Yeah, she put out a press conference after Kevin McCarthy didn't discipline Marjorie Taylor Greene, where she listed him as Kevin McCarthy Q California. So from the Q party, normally where you'd put like an R or a D, she had Q, which is great. I think they should roll with that.
Yeah, no, I think that that would be...
Well, and that's the thing, too. I think it was so crazy to... I think this is another, I think, a political misstep on Kevin McCarthy's part, because by not doing it himself and keeping it, you know, inside the party, basically, he basically forced all of those people to actually vote on this. And the Democrats are already being fairly vocal about their plan to turn Republicans into the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
So by not disciplining her himself, he made it much easier to make her the face of the party, because now you can be like, look, the entirety of the caucus, short of 11 people, voted to keep her on the Education Committee. So, like, I think Kevin McCarthy actually mucked this one up. And I'm sure it was because he didn't want to, like, piss off all of her people because they're Trump people. So I think there's a broader issue of, like, whether, like, you know, he himself is going to get primaried or what's going to happen with it. You know,
well,
like,
and I think so his membership
is it to a degree,
terrified
but I think,
of that wing of the party.
Totally, they are. But I think electorally,
dumb.
Just to let this person stay on her committee and then to force your own members to vote to allow her to do that, I think it's going to come back to bite them in the ass come midterms
also,
in 2022.
I feel like one thing that that ends up being an issue on both sides of the aisle is, listen, there's too much money in politics, and that money oftentimes leads to bizarre outcomes in elections. But all the money in the world cannot buy you votes if you are, like, actually a candidate that cannot stand on any kind of credible platform. Like, I know things aren't great for any party at the moment, but trying to keep that Trump money train going, which is, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene raised a ton of money off of these antics. That, I think, is really what their priority is right now, is trying to keep that money train going and not interrupting, you know, not riling the far right, not interrupting this funding mechanism they've figured out, especially since a lot of traditional players have pulled out of Republican fundraising at the moment. You know, most of the big corporations that play both sides are at the moment trying to look like they don't donate to Republicans because of Trump. So I think that this was largely like a fundraising calculation in addition to, you know, trying to avoid primaries for his members. And I just, like, money does not buy you votes always. It can. It's helpful to have the money, but if there is one thing that I think you can learn from the rise of the far left in the Democratic Party, it's that that's not the case in every race. Money is not a direct line to votes. It is an indirect path to votes. And if the money you're taking is can give you the ability to advertise to everyone, but actually turns voters off, which is what they found with a lot of expensive advertising wasn't working in this last cycle because people were turned off by it. If the big money, if the TV spots can't buy you votes, the big money doesn't always become equivalent to lots and lots of votes. So if you're selling out your entire party on the basis of maintaining a fundraising stream that is from completely insane people that turns voters off, that isn't actually a foolproof strategy.
That's not a winning strategy.
No,
exactly.
Like, it might work in a few really insane-o places, but in places like Georgia, It's not, it's going to, first of all, rile up grassroots fundraising figures. It's going to mean that Wall Street is sort of forced to come in on one side when they would really rather play both sides against the middle. It's going to mean all these things you don't want it to mean just so that you can keep, what, Mercer money? Like, who fucking cares about these people?
Totally.
And Sheldon Adelson's dead. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. And you've just allowed all of the, you know, every, and they should know how this can hurt too, because they have been doing this fairly effectively for election cycle after election cycle, basically like making Nancy Pelosi this boogeyman that like scares up votes on their side. Like, that's what Democrats are going to do to them. And that has been effective.
Yeah.
So it totally works. So like, and now there's proof via a vote.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, look, 200 of you supported this woman. So like, the idea that you're trying to say that you don't support this woman
is
now actually impossible for you, because like, we have proof that you do.
Yeah. No, it's
It's
dumb. Also, I hope that in every press release from now on, everyone refers to every single Republican who voted for this as Q dash whatever state they're from.
I know. Totally.
I mean, I would like to keep that
going.
I do
have one thing that I want to say about Biden on this.
Yes.
Because, and I have the same thoughts about how he has been sort of treating impeachment.
Yeah.
Where he sort of like, you know, for impeachment, you know, the Senate is going to do what they're going to do. The Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republicans are either going to do what they're going to do, or the House is going to do what they're going to do. And I, while I sort of understand this in a way that like, this is not surprising to me, I also feel like I really wish, and I don't think it would, I think it would actually be good for him to do. I think that like, in a way that like, I think people would be like, yes, we are proud that you are standing up to these people. You know, part of the main reason that he claims to have entered the race in the first place, and the thing that he said time and time again on the campaign trail and has continued to say as there was an insurrection and everything else, is that, you know, Joe Biden was going to rid the world of all of the bulging veins.
Right.
You know, right? Like, you
those
know, he got in
veins
because of
were an obsession of his.
Of, right. You know, he got in because of these conspiracy theories and also white supremacy, which certainly, you know, Trump, you know, was the leader of, and obviously Marjorie Taylor Greene is a part of. Like, I don't understand why they are ducking and dodging both of these things when you specifically told us that the reason that you are there is to root these things out.
Right.
So, like, if you are saying that you want to root out this type of behavior, well, there's somebody in the House over there.
Right. Who is
specifically
exhibiting it.
Like, exhibiting it. Who, like, you could say something about. Your press secretary is being asked about it on the reg. Like, why can't you have an opinion about her? She's fucking dangerous to this country. And you can say that.
Yeah.
And you should say it.
Yeah, and I also don't think...
Because you're the president.
It's not...
Tell people that she shouldn't be in Congress.
It's not a controversial partisan statement to say...
No!
He's not saying random run-of-the-mill Republican guy is not fit to serve, but she has exhibited specific behavior that indicates she's not fit to serve, that she is actually there to thwart a lot of the democratic principles that they are sworn to uphold in that job.
Yes.
And that she admits that freely. You know, don't, this is not, I think he's treating all of these like they are incredibly partisan and therefore not credible things to pursue. And I think that the problem with that is that it makes it seem like there's two sides. And it's with impeachment right now, there are not actually two sides. If you are a patriot, if you are someone who cares about the Constitution, if you are a person who doesn't believe in violent insurrection against the sitting government, if you are a person who believes that our votes should count towards votes, then you are a person who currently thinks that Donald Trump broke the law. There is not a second side where you're like, well, he was just saying what he thought was true. What, like, the second side of the story doesn't exist. So if you give him the credibility of acting like you don't know if it's best for the country if he's impeached for literally committing an act of sedition openly on television, then you are like a person who is acting like there's some conversation to be had about what he was up to. And That.
Yeah. And who is he trying to not piss off?
Well, I was going to say.
Saying that Donald Trump should be.
That
like,
only leads the conspiracy theorists further into their den. It doesn't help them see reality. So the people that are going to be mad about it are going to be mad about it regardless. But they're going to feel like they have a more credible position if you give them that kind of credibility. The same with Marjorie Taylor Greene. What she has been doing has been beyond the scope of what should be allowed in that position. It's not controversial to say that she has violated the oaths that she's taken. If it was controversial to say that, then there would be a real argument to be had about whether or not she should be thrown out. But there's not really.
Right.
Certainly not from the perspective of anyone who just has like a general passing interest in what her job is and what oaths she promised to uphold. Like, if you are a person who has just like listened to a person being sworn in, you are aware that she's violated those oaths. So like, don't pretend like there's a second side of the story that we're all waiting for. I understand. I'm like a person who often can go out of my way to understand the second side of a story about an individual acting crazy. I understand.
You know,
but Brent is feeling bad for everyone all the time. I only have that kind of snap judgment for Democrats. I oftentimes assume Republicans don't have the right information, not the elected officials, but Republican voters. I often will assume don't have the right information. And I think I'm right about that a lot of the time. I will often say to myself, you know, say on this podcast, I think that the left should actually make a play for those voters by telling them the truth. I don't think that we should assume they're stupid. I don't think we should assume they don't know what they need and want. In this case, though, I think there is actually like not a second argument to be made about this behavior on either side. And Biden's wishy-washiness, I think it's a show. It's like how he wanted to meet with the Republicans. I think that he knows. And I just don't think that there's appetite among Democratic voters to play ball with these people right now, because they have shown that they will be disruptive to the process in any way that they can be. So why not cut them off?
Right. Well, and also, you know, I think that there's this, he still has this idea that he sort of is like this great like crossover candidate where like a bunch of, you know, like moderate Republicans voted for him. But like nobody who voted for Marjorie Taylor Greene.
No, exactly. He doesn't need to worry about pissing off the Marjorie Taylor Greene demographic.
No, there's no crossover voters with the Marjorie Taylor Greene people.
No. Like and also those Republicans that voted for him also want her out. This is not the Republican Party.
100%.
They don't want to be in the same party as me and Brent. They are not interested in my opinions about everything.
No, but they don't want to be in the same party as her either.
No, exactly. They're in our party right now because they can't stand her. So get her out to get them out of our party. Because certainly no one wants to talk to them. No one has time for them.
Yeah.
Oh, in any case. In a different twist of fate, they also tried to strip Liz Cheney of her leadership positions for voting to impeach Trump. And they failed. Because that was the only courageous thing Liz Cheney has ever done in her life. And it should work out for her.
Yeah. But a lot of people, I feel like the reporting was like she keeps it in a large margin. Like I kept everybody kept saying like, you know, it was like a blowout to like let her keep her leadership. But like also like a third of Republicans like voted to strip her of it. Also, it was 145 to 61. So it's like, yes, that is like a blowout, but like also like that's a lot of people who were like, no, she can't keep her leadership because she like on one vote like voted her conscience. Like
also though, 60 members of the House are like certifiably insane right now.
Full nuts.
Like there is not like a world in which more than two-thirds of the Republican caucus can act even half reasonable at this moment.
Right. Well, I agree with you. I feel like that's what the reporting should have been.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The reporting should have been like 61 Republicans.
Are like completely batshit insane people.
Certifiably crazy in vote to oust Liz Cheney from her. Like that's the headline.
Yeah. No, that was probably the CNN chyron because they've really... By the way, have you seen how much their ratings have fallen since Donald Trump left office? MSNBC and CNN have seen like their ratings just tank because, you know, who cares what Joe Biden's up to? In any case.
Oh, man, they were having such a great run of it.
They're going to get it back for the impeachment. I mean, that's going to be good television. Everybody keep your wits about you for that. One thing that Joe Biden is sort of correctly ascertaining is that they should really stop giving Donald Trump intelligence briefings. First of all, he was barely getting them before. So
right, he wasn't listening to them before. He's probably paying closer attention now.
Well, yeah, because he wants to sell secrets.
He was.
But also, exactly. You can't get him to listen to anything that doesn't have his name in it. So if it's not about him, he's not retaining the information anyway. But I think Biden rightfully, and actually, I think Biden did a good job with this because, so he was sitting, he was on CBS Evening News. Nora O'Donnell asked him what his worst fear if Trump continues to get these intelligence briefings is, which they always are trying to get you into that, into admitting what the problem would be. And mm-hmm. guys, these are like the literal blueprints Trump uses to cause trouble. Like he listens to those answers, then he's like, yes, that is exactly what I'm going to do. So if whatever Joe Biden said as an answer there was going to be exactly what he started doing, if it was like he'll sell information to the Russians, Donald Trump would be like, I should sell this information to the Russians.
That's
Biden, I think, smartly was like, I'd rather not speculate out loud. because there's really no reason to give Trump any ideas. Because he doesn't have a lot of his own ideas. And these are often, just as he often has the idea of whoever last spoke to him, he often also develops an idea from whoever was last speaking about him. So
right.
I think...
Or whatever he's on television.
Let's stop asking Joe Biden what could go wrong if we stop giving him the intelligence briefings and just like assume that we all know the answer.
Right.
Like sometimes common sense will tell you the answer to a question. And with Donald Trump, we have said this whole time that you can always tell what he's going to do based on common sense. What would the common sense of what a narcissist would do in any given situation? You can always speculate 100% correct with 100% accuracy what he's going to do. So you don't need to ask. Everyone knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one needs his advice.
It's weird. I didn't know that ex-presidents got those. And so I was like, why are they getting those? I guess apparently like traditionally those briefings are like given to former presidents and like just, and they're obviously like, they're not getting the same information that the actual president is getting, right? They're just like getting enough information to sort of like, you know, act as like a representative of the country. Like if they're meeting with a foreign leader example, or even just sort of like if there's like high level talks or anything like that, where like we would often sort of like include an ex-president. So like, it is nice to have that just as like, you know, the former leader of the free world who has relationships with, you know, people, like for them to just like at least vaguely know what's going on in the country.
I will also...
So obviously the intelligence community can dial those up or down depending on the circumstance and who the person is and stuff. So I have a feeling they're probably not telling him...
Much already.
...much that he could sell anyway because they're not stupid. They've met him before.
Right. I will also note that a lot of classified information is actually common knowledge, and it's just that what's classified is that the government admits they know it's happening. So, like, a lot of classified briefings are not classified in the sense that, like, there's secret information in them. It's often information that is freely available in the New York Times. It's just that the government has not yet admitted that they are either engaged in or involved in whatever incident it is. And so it's their role in it is classified, but the information itself is public knowledge. I was kind of shocked to learn that myself. And sure, you know, there's some information that's secret, obviously. But a lot of what you think of as classified briefings are not things that you don't know. What you don't know is what the government is considering doing about them. But you are like aware of what's happening for the most part. Donald Trump is already, there's a way to give him classified briefings without giving him any information, is my point.
Right. Just send him a copy of the New York Times and call it his intelligence.
Exactly.
Briefing.
He won't read it. It's not about him. So doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in California, we have some real situations brewing, you guys. Everything.
Yeah. And I feel like we talked about this a while ago, but like I have mentioned this to a few people this week who were surprised to hear this, who just sort of like didn't really have it on its radar. But this Newsom recall is totally going to happen. Some new things got reported this week where like the groups who have been gathering it have like claimed that they have 1.4 million signatures. They only need 1.5. They're aiming to get 2 million just because obviously some of them will get
thrown out
as they're counted. But like as that news came out, like a lot of new big money GOP donors came in to sort of like help push it over the edge. And they have another month left. They have until like the middle of March to make it happen. So it seems like for all, and also there were a lot of reports too about like unions starting to like get their acts together and, you know, Democratic ad makers like coming in and like, you know, talking to the governor, and like everyone is gearing up for an expensive recall election in
California.
What
a fucking waste of everyone's time.
What a waste.
Because keep in mind, like, listen, everyone's mad at everyone right now because no governor has handled the COVID crisis correctly. And I would love to recall all of them. But there is not, I don't think, a taste in California to replace Gavin Newsom with a Republican, considering how much worse those states have been doing during COVID.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about this. Like, you know, and I think in thinking back to the I think another important thing that we will have to see is who ultimately ends up jumping into the race, because, like, in large part, I think why we did recall Gray Davis, who actually, I think, like, had like a 72% of people did not approve of Gray Davis. So, like, that was just sort of like, he was like roundly hated. But we also, there was Arnold Schwarzenegger who was waiting in the wings here. And so, like, that was sort of like enticing to people, as insane as that sounded. But, like, that was sort of like a thing that people were like, well, let's.
Well, also, Arnold Schwarzenegger like, was not a conservative Republican. He was a very moderate Republican. He ran on a fairly moderate platform. And even though that was the most insane, ridiculous thing that has ever happened in California history, there was the energy crisis was going on. So there was a crisis going on at the state level that was literally impacting like 100% of households in a way where it was all happening at the corporate level. It wasn't like a thing like COVID, which is like not Newsom's fault that it came. Like Gray Davis mishandled
it was
a corporate,
of their own doing.
Right.
That.
So it was a slight, and Gray Davis also was a kind of old line political hack in California who has this very kind of like aristocratic seeming quality to him. Like the one time that I saw him in person, it was at an Obama fundraiser that I was volunteering at just to see what goes on at Obama fundraisers. And Gray Davis showed up and it was like, it looked like a Vanderbilt had just shown up. Like he kind of like all these people were fretting around him and he was like a tall waspy fellow, very soft spoken. And like, he looked like he didn't relate to our problems, you know, like,
right.
Whereas Newsom is a showboater, which is a slightly different breed of politician and is the breed that Arnold Schwarzenegger belongs to.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And also, like, you know, I mean, one of the people who has claimed that they will run if this goes through is John Cox, who Newsom ran against in 2018 and, like, just
wiped the floor
slaughtered. With. So, like, I think that, like, you're absolutely right. And then also former San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer, like, you may not be liking how Gavin Newsom is handling things right now. I am not liking how Gavin Newsom is handling things right now. He just got a bunch of shit from his own party for, you know, and his approval ratings have fallen. They were up over 60% and now they're hovering at about 50%. But like, just because you don't like Gavin Newsom doesn't mean you want John Cox to be the governor.
No, I don't think there's like an interest in switching to Republican leadership in a state where we have Democratic supermajorities in every level of the legislature.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, that is, like, completely different. The state has changed since that last recall. I mean, like, we know that the, you know, it's, like, the Republicans are the third party in the state of California behind
no party. Well, and that's, I also think that, our elections have changed slightly. Our political alignments have changed. And also, this is not quite the same thing as the props, where you can often get people, like with Prop 22, you can pump a ton of money into something and confuse everyone because they don't understand the topic. Everyone understands the difference between Democrats and Republicans. That's not the problem. The problem with, you know, understanding the difference between Uber telling you that they're going to provide health care if you pass Prop 22 and the fact that that law strips you of labor rights based on a law that you've never read, that you don't quite understand, that you heard from someone was bad for independent contractors. Like, that's a very complicated thing to parse. And the huge money that got invested in that campaign was really meaningful because they were educating everyone on the issue as it happened, so that everyone had to learn from someone what it was about. No one is confused about what the difference between Gavin Newsom, who's just an ineffective Democrat, and John Cox, who's like a horrible, you know, conservative Republican, is.
Yeah.
I feel like more than anything, it's just going to be like California is like this anyway, but just like an expensive and stupid waste of everyone's time and money.
Oh, yeah. And I think that the people who are doing it know that. And I think they are literally only doing it to, like,
just be difficult,
to cause trouble. Yeah. They're doing it because they think maybe this hurts Gavin Newsom, maybe with whatever his other political aspirations are. And maybe it does. Maybe they're right. I don't know.
But I would argue, like, Gavin Newsom hurts himself with his future political aspirations.
Well, he does.
I don't think they need he doesn't need their help.
No, no, he doesn't. But anyway, so, like, you know, it's just annoying to have. But, like, if you live in California and this is not on your radar yet, gird your loins.
Gird your loins and preemptively explain to your friends why it's stupid so that they don't get wrapped up. Like, the number of people who turned out to have idiotic thoughts about the props this year, even after we gave them clear, correct answers to all of them, was astonishing. So
right,
exactly. Don't make us have to waste time making phone calls about this. Just know the right answer already. And sorry that the right answer is just voting for an ineffective governor. You can't win them all.
Sometimes you
got to do it. Now, if that doesn't make your head hurt enough, there's more headaches on the way if you choose, because the pillow wars are continuing, even though Donald Trump is gone. And the MyPillow guy, Mike Lindell, is now releasing what is essentially like a multi-hour infomercial on OANN. That basically is just like election conspiracy theories revisited.
Yeah, he made a 2-hour movie essentially, and then like bought 12 hours to just like run it on a loop on OWN.
On Friday. And they're having to run like a run like a warning with it that's like, this is bought time. This isn't reflecting the views of OWN.
Oh, I know. OWN, who has been pushing election conspiracy theories, still had to run a disclaimer for this movie because they were like, we don't want any part of this. Probably because some people got sued for billions of dollars this week. Fox News did, and like Rudy Giuliani already did, by some of those companies that make the voting systems that got used, like Dominion and Smart Logic or Smart-O-Matic or something. But anyway.
Smartmatic.
Smartmatic, yeah. It's not a great
put name, a vowel in there. Don't be idiots. Smartmatic. I can't even with these people.
I know. But anyway, it sounds crazy. Well, first off, it's called Absolute Truth. But when they put it on YouTube, they lost the T in absolute, so it was released as Absolute Truth, and then they had to go back and fix it because people were like,
Absolute Truth.
You can't even spell the name of your own movie, like amateur hour. But I mean, it's just like a whole cavalcade of conspiracy theories, election fraud.
It's got the drunk lady.
You know, all kinds of discredited people in there. Melissa Carone, who is the one, that blonde woman who was like clearly drunk at that hearing with Rudy Giuliani, who was actually too crazy for Rudy Giuliani because he basically like had to. That was also the meeting that I believe he farted at.
Yes, it was. Not yes.
Mistaken. God. We need the film version.
I feel that, like there is like immediately a movie to be made of just the 3 months in between the election day itself and like January 20th that is just like, you know, Four Seasons Total Landscaping and Rudy Giuliani farting. And like there's like a slapstick film to be made that you'd only have to look through 3 months of footage for, and you could probably make it feature length.
No,
it would be.
Yeah, it'd be very simple. Yeah. But there's like crazy things in there. Like there's a quote from him, because he sort of is like, as like you said, it's kind of like infomercial style, but he said, this is an attack not only on those other countries with communism, but they had domestic traitors right here in our country. Whatever is going on right now, we're seeing it. They're suppressing cancel culture. They're trying to cancel us all out. I've just seen churches, Christian churches, they're
not
being
Christian
attacked.
Churches
but I mean, and this is all like while the video is like cutting between like insane stock footage and then like a rubber stamp that says
it's canceled. Like clip art.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Also, Newsmax even had an interview with him that they had to cut because it was too nutty. Like his own sources are starting to turn on him. And the wording of the disclaimer that OWN put is like kind of hilarious because it's, that the facts are not intended to be taken or interpreted by the viewer as established facts. They're not intended to be interpreted as facts, even though they're being presented as such, basically. It's, but in opposition to all of this, and because there's too many jokes to be made, we also now have learned that David Hogg of Parkland activist March for Our Lives fame is starting a progressive pillow company. So that now when you buy pillows, you have to think about whether or not you want your pillow money going to progressives or like lunatic fringe conspiracy theorists. Because apparently you can't just buy a pillow anymore. Like, no, betting is now political.
The one that, yeah, whichever one matches your ideology.
And now if you go on like a Tinder date, you're going to have to check their sheets. That's going to be a whole situation. You're going to have to ask people to show you the tag from their pillowcase to make sure that they weren't buying Republican pillows. No one needed more of this.
I did like his tweet, though, because he tweeted out, he said, key parts of the company. Union made in America to create good jobs that support American families. Have an emphasis on supporting progressive causes. And then lastly, not attempt a white supremacist overthrow of the United States government.
This is like...
And people initially thought that he was kidding, but he's actually not. Because he's like starting it with like this software entrepreneur, William Legate. And they were like, I like had to send out an additional tweet at one point, like clarifying that
this
like,
is a real idea.
They're doing this.
It's like the credo of pillow companies. Remember when we all had to get progressive phones? Now we're going to need progressive phones, pillows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guys, this is too niche. I want just any... I don't know how a pillow company became the center of conspiracy theory discourse. It's one of the many surrealist things that cropped up in the last few years. And I certainly didn't see all of that continuing in the Biden era. But here we are. David Hogg is going to have a progressive pillow company. He... tweeted, this pillow fight just got very real. You're expect to hear a lot of dumb puns coming up like that because that's... Yep.
Should we pick something and like start a progressive version of?
Obviously.
Like something that is known to like be, have like a bunch of, be owned by Republicans.
Yeah, should we start a casino?
Like all the pizza chains or could we have like a progressive trash pizza
chain? Oh yeah, like Godfathers but for progressives.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not
because like Domino's, Pizza Hut, all of those pizza
we can't eat Godfathers.
Like
I've never tried Godfathers. I don't even
donating all their money.
I don't know
to
where Godfathers even is. That wouldn't even make sense to me as an idea. But
well, it's pizza that you would never associate.
Yeah,
I've
never ordered Domino's or Godfathers pizza. Domino's I at least know I could order. Godfathers I wouldn't even know where you'd find one. But I also have only lived in pizza forward kinds of locations, so that. It's not really a credible issue.
Godfather's has a taco pizza, which was always a big hit because it came with like Doritos crushed on top of it.
What is going on in the Midwest with Doritos? There's walking tacos. That's situation in and of itself.
Which is a taco, a food you can already walk with.
There is no need to create a taco in a bag with crushed chips when a taco shell provides the perfect walking shell, receptacle that you could ever... need. There's nothing more walkable than a taco. So a lot of curious things happening. A lot of questionable ideas. Yeah, we'll think about what kinds of... Should we start an internet delivery service to rival Amazon? A progressive Amazon?
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like that. We'll think on it.
Totally.
If you have ideas, tweet them at us.
We'll allow our... workers to unionize. That's right. I think there's a big union vote coming up.
I know. And they tried to block it and they are not allowed to.
Not allowed
to. I know.
Yeah.
Which I was shocked to hear because.
Like in Alabama, a lot of places. God bless.
I mean, get in there and unionize. If any group of people deserves a union, it's Amazon employees.
I mean, hello.
Amazon and Walmart employees, both people that Bernie Sanders has been out there trying to get unions for a while now. At one point, a friend of mine was like, well, if Bernie Sanders really cares about this, why isn't he getting out there and getting these people unions? And I immediately pulled up like 12 headlines that were like, Bernie Sanders, personally responsible for union vote in Walmart, you know, in West XYZ. I was like, this is literally exactly what he's doing. And then she was like, well, why isn't he publicizing it more? And I was like, you're reading the wrong news sources, you guys.
Well,
in any case, that's the news this week. It's February, so it's a short month. So you can feel good that 2021 can only throw 29 days or 28 days. Sorry, it's not a leap year. 28 days worth of chaos at you in February.
So true.
So that's nice. And, you know, we will be back next week with some updates from the impeachment minds.
We'll probably be tweeting about it.
I would if I knew if I had to guess what we would be up to in the middle of the impeachment hearings.
So,
it would be Twitter.
Follow us
on Twitter.
On Twitter, Brainstuff Live.
And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.